Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello, everyone. Good to have you with us. It is week 16 in the National Football League. Dave Kellner here in the studio with the host of the Beating the Book podcast, Gil Alexander, on the line to look ahead to our televised games this weekend. We've got the Chiefs at the Steelers, the Colts at the Cowboys, the Seahawks at the Cardinals, and we finish off with the Broncos at the Bengals on Monday Night Football. And joining me now on the line to preview the action, Gil Alexander, and fingers crossed, Gil, that your cold has dissipated in the last week, and you're back fighting fit, Gil.
Dave, I don't know what I got. I don't know if it was hand in mouth, Ebola. I'm not sure, but I fought it off, my friend. I fought it off.
That is very, very good news, Gil. Penultimate week of the regular season in the National Football League. Time moves quickly, Gil. Just the 2 weeks left in the regular season. And obviously not long enough for the Chicago Bears to wait, first of all. They've decided to bench Jay Cutler, who they gave... We mentioned this on last week's podcast. They gave him the astronomical contract and now decide to bench him with just 2 weeks of the regular season left.
Yeah. First of all, let me just say, I meant foot and mouth, so I even botched the joke earlier. So I'm already 0 for 1. As far as Jay Cutler, you know, this is the time of year, 2 weeks left in the regular season, where we're going to talk about this today, where you wonder about teams' motivations, both from a standpoint of do they have anything left to play for in their entire season? In other words, are they already thinking about vacation, or have they clinched a playoff berth but can't really advance further in their playoff seeding, so they want to sit some players? It's a huge thing to think about in our handicapping. Well, in the case of Jay Cutler, he went to sleep about 2 months ago, I think. And he is one of these guys, and if you watch the Bears play, he's maddening because you know he's got the talent, you know he's got this cannon arm, and yet when things don't go well on the field for him, he's expressionless. He never shows any emotion out there. You wonder if he cares, and he repeats most, you know, incriminating. He repeats the same mistakes over and over. He's very loose with the football. He throws picks. He fumbles. He's done, and so I really do sympathize with the Bears fan base, but it's a right move to make. They've got nothing else to play for. They're done. You might as well see what you have in your backup, Jimmy Clausen. And by the way, I suspect it's not much, just my opinion, having seen him play in college. But I think, and we're not going to talk about the Bears-Lions game, but if we did, I'd say one thing to you, which is I don't think the Bears care anymore. Mm. I don't think they show up. They look listless. They look heartless. They just look like they don't care. And Cutler is the symbol of that.
Yeah, he is. Where do you think he will land next season then, Gil? Is there a natural fit for him in the NFL?
You know, I'm not a contract expert, Dave, but my understanding is that they're kind of stuck with him next year.
Right.
In other words, monetarily, based on how salary cap rules are laid out in the NFL, it would do the Bears no good to lose him before next season. So I think they're stuck with him for at least one more season, which is really the sort of kick in the butt. You know, here's your guy. You're going to see what your backup is. Oh, but by the way, just to let you know, we got to have this guy Cutler for one more year. So, you know, that's the plight. That's what happens when you sign a guy to a huge contract like that.
Let's have a look at this week's matches then, Gil. And we start off with the Chiefs at the Steelers. The Kansas City Chiefs 7-5 on the money line. The Pittsburgh Steelers 5-8. And on the spread, the Kansas City Chiefs plus 3, 20-21. The Steelers with the extra juice, 20-23, minus the 3 points. The Chiefs in the hunt, Gil, at 8-6. The Steelers just a half game behind the Cincinnati Bengals in the AFC North. And if the Steelers can win this one, Gil, that will set up a divisional clash with the Cincinnati Bengals in Week 17, the final week of the regular season. And that could turn out to be a pulsating matchup, that one, Gil. So a lot on the line here in this match.
A pulsating matchup indeed. And if the Steelers win this game, you're right about the division clash next week, but if they win here, they at least clinch a playoff berth, division aside for the moment. So they will at least have clinched a wild card berth if they beat the Chiefs here. And, you know, I think they get it done. I like the Steelers here, giving up 3 points. They haven't made the playoffs in Pittsburgh in 3 years. They smell this. And if I were to ask you or ask any listener, you know, a trivia question, who's got the best offense by the numbers in the NFL this year? Is it, you know, is it Aaron Rodgers and the Packers? Is it Peyton Manning and the Broncos? You know, what choice would they come up with to get the correct answer? Because the correct answer is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And this sort of snuck up on everybody, you know, about 4, 5, 6 weeks ago. Nothing was going on. I may have the number of weeks wrong, but you remember Big Ben put up those two straight 500-yard games. And that's what really turned this around. And right now, this is the most potent offense in football, and it's a three-headed monster, much like Dallas has a three-headed monster. This one is Big Ben, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell. And I think that's where the key here lies. Le'Veon Bell against a very porous Chiefs run defense. Chiefs give up 4.9 yards per rush attempt. Only the Saints and Giants are worse, and just by a fraction of a point. And I think you put Le'Veon Bell up against that at home in Pittsburgh in the cold. I love the Steelers here.
We've got two elite running backs opposing each other here as well, Gil. We've talked about Le'Veon Bell and his numbers so far are incredible this season. Totaled 1,278 yards and 7 touchdowns with an average of 4.9 yards per carry. So there's no doubting Le'Veon Bell's quality. And for the Chiefs, they rely heavily on Jamaal Charles, but they haven't got the same sort of weapon as the Steelers have in Antonio Brown. In fact, you look at the Chiefs, it's incredible the fact that they, from a wide receiver standpoint, they haven't got anyone to rival Antonio Brown.
Well, it's sort of the en vogue stat that everyone in the mainstream media throws around, and it's worth throwing around, which is the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs have not thrown a touchdown pass to a wide receiver in 17 games dating back to last season when, I remember it very well, Alex Smith hit Dwayne Bowe in the snow and, of all places, Washington, of course. Everybody scores on Washington. But 17 games without throwing a touchdown pass to a wide receiver, you almost have to try to do that. At some point, you're going to stumble into that. A, you know, fumble by the opponent at the three-yard line, maybe a little pass out to a wide receiver just to get a dink touchdown. But last time that's happened, just to give you an idea historically, Cleveland in 2008-2009 went this long without throwing to a wideout in the end zone, and Denver before that way back in 1971-72. So this is the third one of three such streaks since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970, and that makes the Chiefs, you know, that's a reflection of how one-dimensional this Chiefs team is. It's not just getting the ball in the end zone. Alex Smith, just in his career, and I think that we cited these stats on this show earlier in the year, in his career of all quarterbacks with qualified number of starts and attempts, he just doesn't throw the ball downfield. And that's what mitigates, you know, to be honest with you, a Pittsburgh defense, which isn't the greatest, quite frankly. They're really not the greatest and especially vulnerable against the pass. But the Chiefs aren't the team to exploit that. And you can rely on Jamaal Charles. The Chiefs are giving Jamaal about 3 carries per game less. Fewer, that is, than they have in years past. But the one dimension here is, I think, the issue, whereas the Steelers can get you from ground and air, and they're going to be much tougher to stop.
The Steelers -3, the pick at 20-23. Just one final word on this game before we move on, Gil. If the Chiefs, playing devil's advocate here, if the Chiefs are to get anything against the Steelers, that pressure's got to come from up front, hasn't it? They did it against the Raiders last week. They must pressurize Ben Roethlisberger. If they don't, he's going to beat you either with screen passes to Le'Veon Bell or through the air to Antonio Brown.
It's got to come from up front. The Chiefs are actually very good against the pass. They have, I believe, the number one pass defense in football by certain stats. And they do get that with a lot of pressure up front. Only issue is, you know, they did that last week against the Raiders. Can they duplicate it against the Steelers? I suppose they could, but you're right. If they don't, good Lord, Big Ben is going to destroy them. 4,415 passing yards, already a franchise record for Big Ben, and we got two games left to play. 67.2 completion percentage. He's never been this accurate in his career. 29 touchdowns, three off of his personal best back in 2007. It's really the tried-and-true formula. Every quarterback becomes very ordinary, whether they're Joe Montana or, you know, the worst quarterback in the world you can think of. If you pressure them, they become very, very ordinary. That's the Chiefs' route to success, for sure. Pressure the quarterback. The only question is, you know, Big Ben, 72.3 total QBR this season. That's on pace to be his best in the last nine seasons. Doesn't matter what they're throwing at him this year. He's figuring out a way to overcome.
Steelers minus three. I like that in the opening game on Sunday night. Let's have a look at the Colts at the Cowboys. Indianapolis Colts 7-5. The Dallas Cowboys in the betting at 5-8 on the spread. The Colts plus 3 points with extra juice at 20-23. The Cowboys minus the 3 points at 20-21. I presume, Gil, this line will move when we hear whether DeMarco Murray is good to go or not on Sunday. He's had surgery on his broken left hand in the early part of the week on Monday. He actually only needs 87 yards to break Emmitt Smith's single-season franchise record, and the Cowboys need DeMarco Murray to be fit and healthy because he opens up the pass game for Tony Romo and, of course, Dez Bryant.
He absolutely does, and if you don't have DeMarco Murray, you're going to get some combination of Lance Dunbar and Joseph Randall, and anybody who tells you they know what that outcome will be is, you know, sort of making it up or lying to you. We don't know. So, yes, they would love to have DeMarco Murray. They're going to try to assess his ability to grip a football here as game time approaches. It's a very tough game to call, this one. It's also a three-point spread like the previous game we just discussed. Not only does it hinge on whether or not Murray plays, because I do think it matters. You know, a lot of times as handicappers, we say, oh, yeah, so this quarterback's in and that quarterback's out. You know, take the Houston Texans, for instance, Ryan Fitzpatrick versus Case Keenum this week, or Tad Lewis. Does that really matter in the spread, in the scheme of things? In other words, does the Houston quarterback play really matter? Some people tend to overrate such things in terms of line movement. Well, DeMarco Murray might actually really affect the line and might take it off the key number of three. The only issue is, Dave, we don't know if the Colts have full motivation here. Again, what we said at the top of the show, not because they're not going to the playoffs. They are going to the playoffs, but the Colts have already won their division. For them to overcome the Patriots or Broncos for a first-round bye, kind of unlikely with two games left in the season. It could happen, but if you're the Colts, do you sit there and say, well, yeah, I could, but it's so unlikely. Maybe the play is to rest some of our players here the last couple weeks of the season. And in fact, Chuck Pagano, their head coach, has wondered openly about that. Maybe perhaps sitting wide receiver Reggie Wayne, who's the veteran on the team. You know, so there's some thought of that, and that's what makes this game a little tougher to handicap, I think.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Gil, the Colts already won the AFC South and unlikely to move past the Patriots or the Broncos. And on the flip side of that, Dallas got everything to play for because they are... I mean, if conceivably, if they lose one of their two final games, Philadelphia can capture the division and... The Cowboys could even miss out on the playoffs, winning 11 matches, couldn't they, I think, and that would be incredible.
Yeah, it would be. If you go 11-5 and miss the playoffs, I mean, I remember that happening once when I was a kid. I think there was a Denver Broncos team in the 80s that was 11-5 and they missed the playoffs. To be honest with you, Dave, I don't know if that's happened in recent times. If you're 11-5, you ought to be able to go to the playoffs, but you're right. In fact, if Dallas goes 1-1 here in the final two games in Philly, and Philly's going to be favorite in both games, they're already a big favorite against the Redskins, they will be a big favorite in their final game as well against the Giants, I believe it is. This is the game that Dallas has to worry about. I mean, Dallas has the Redskins in the last game, which for whatever reason, the Redskins always give them trouble. In fact, the Redskins beat them earlier this year, but this is a game the Cowboys have to worry about. And you're right, they lose this. If they're in a tie with Philly at the end of the season, doesn't matter how they're in a tie, however they're in a tie, they don't win the division. And in the wild card race, they're on the outside looking in. So this is huge for Dallas. It means everything, despite this great season they're having. And they're 10-4. Keep in mind, they're 3-4 at home. For whatever reason, they have been super successful on the road. Again, they're 7-0 on the road. No team has lost fewer than two games. Dallas 7-0. They've had trouble at home. You can read into that or not. I'm not sure if that's just coincidence or if there's something to that. The only issue I have with the Colts, again, as much as I want to just jump on the Colts here, I said it last week when we took the Texans, and if you got plus 6.5, we lost that game last week on the Texans against the Colts. The problem with the Colts is they're so one-dimensional. Mm. You know, they've thrown more passes than any team, 582 passes, and those numbers have come despite ranking last in catchable balls dropped. So almost 9% of passes on target Colts receivers have dropped this year. But they keep passing it because they have virtually no running game. And Dallas can be beat through the air. It's just nicer if you're more dynamic than that on offense. So for me, this is a stay away because of too many balls, really, figuratively speaking, being up in the air.
I suppose as well, Gil, that given those statistics that you just mentioned about Andrew Luck and his passing this season, they have thrown 582 passes. It's not entirely surprising that he's tied for third in interceptions thrown this season, Gil. Is that a concern going into the postseason playoffs? He's had 12 fumbles as well in 14 games, yeah. which is big. That's not going to give him that much confidence going into the postseason.
No, I think you're right. And, you know, it's funny, last year in the playoffs, so Andrew Luck, the Colts played two playoff games last year, and I think he had 7 picks collectively in those two games. And the previous year, he had thrown some picks in the playoffs. And I remember saying on Twitter after the 7 picks, if that were another quarterback, like Romo, for instance, who the public loves to bash if he does something wrong, or RG3, people would be killing him.
Yeah.
But because it's Andrew Luck, he's almost it's funny, it's almost beyond reproach. And if you say anything bad about Andrew Luck, they're like, oh, what are you talking about? So if we are to come up with one criticism, I think you nailed it, which is he is a little loose with the football. Maybe, you know, it's expected because he does throw it so much. But the fumbles could be a little concerning. He's a postseason pick machine. And so that's the one thing hanging over his head. And it hasn't really been muted much here. There's not much to go on to say that won't happen again. It's a concern. It's a concern. And sort of, it's kind of unfair to him because they have no running game. But at the same time, 7 picks in 2 playoff games last year was alarming.
Mm. Sunday night football then. Seattle Seahawks at the Arizona Cardinals. This is early hours of Monday morning UK time. The Seahawks 5-19. The Cardinals in the betting at 29-10. The spread here, the Seahawks -8, 20-21. And the Cardinals +8, 20-23. Worth having a look at the total points line as well here. 36.5 the total points. The under 10-11, the over 10-11. And I suppose, Gil, that tells you everything you need to know about this matchup. It's one for the purists, Gil. Two great defenses going head-to-head on Sunday night.
It is two defenses going head-to-head. And again, 36 points in today's NFL, lines don't usually get that low. There were some Baltimore-Pittsburgh games in recent years that got a little lower than that, but those when those teams were in their defensive heyday, so if you do the whole conflation with 36 points and an 8-point line, you get basically a 22-14 kind of game. I don't know. I like Seattle by a little more than that. I'm taking the Seahawks here. I'll give the touchdown and the hook. I'll give more than a touchdown on the road. Not a recipe for long-term success in the NFL, but the key here, Dave, Ryan Lindley is your quarterback in Arizona. And I think that's the difference. I think absolutely nothing bad to say about the Arizona defense, like you point out. But the Seahawks defense is second to none. And they're going up against a guy in Ryan Lindley who's historically bad in his time in the NFL. And you can actually, say it by the numbers. 0 touchdowns and 7 picks during his three-year career. No player in the history of the National Football League has more career pass attempts without a touchdown. He completed 52% of his passes back in 2012 with the Cardinals. Completion percentage can sometimes be deceptive because there's some quarterbacks who are in offenses where you just sort of throw short passes and your completion percentage by nature is going to spike. But if you're throwing 52% rate over, you know, six games, chances are you're not that good. And I think we have a really poor quarterback here in Ryan Lindley. By the way, they're going to give some reps to Logan Thomas, their backup, as well. He'll get some play in this game. He's not very good either. And if you saw Ryan Lindley in relief of Drew Stanton last week, 4 for 10, 30 yards, against the Seahawks defense, boy, I don't know how they score.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that.
Yeah, the running game is already so poor. So even if you think the Cardinals will be able to hold the Seahawks to a modest amount of points, how's it going to be enough to overcome with that offense?
I know we're talking not negatively about the Cardinals because they are a football team that's 11-3. More negativity towards the quarterback, Ryan Lindley. Just talk for a second, Gil, about the job that Bruce Arians has done with the franchise to lead them to this record. 7-0 at home as well this season so far at the University of Phoenix Stadium. He had some choice words post-match following his win against the Rams, but he's probably done enough to deliver his sermon so far this season, Gil. He's been fantastic, hasn't he?
He's been fantastic. For those who don't know, when Chuck Pagano of the Colts was diagnosed with cancer a couple years ago, Arian stepped in as his assistant coach and guided the Colts to an extremely successful season. And from that, he got this job in Arizona. He's been great. He's been absolutely great. I did find it curious. You're right to point that out. I did find it curious that he went after the Rams last week. Like, I believe he said they believed their own press clippings.
Yeah.
And that comes on the heels of the Rams coach, Jeff Fisher, making that stunt against the Redskins where he threw out the players as captains who were in the RG3 trade. So coach is acting very funny lately. I don't know what that means in the end. In the wash, though, Arians has been great. He's been particularly good on replay challenges. He seems to do that very well, which eludes a lot of coaches. That's an in-game thing that he's very good at. And sure, the Cardinals are already in the playoffs. So whether it's Drew Stanton, who's not expected back for another couple weeks minimum, they're really hoping it's going to be Stanton. Because if it's Lindley, they're one and done. And if the Seahawks beat them here, which I expect them to do so handily, that's the end of the division for the Cardinals as well, at least going into the final game of the season. They will be behind the Seahawks on a head-to-head because the Seahawks will have swept them. Keep in mind, the Seahawks beat them 19-3 earlier this season. Arians has been great. There's nothing bad to say about him, but unfortunately, this is who he has right now as his quarterback.
And you mentioned it a few weeks ago on the podcast, the Seattle Seahawks now just behind the New England Patriots in the betting for the Super Bowl, coming good at the right time. Richard Sherman, 6 interceptions in his last 6 meetings with the Cardinals as well. I can't imagine the Cardinals scoring almost double figure points in this matchup. It's difficult to envisage really them getting many points on the board.
It really is. The more you talk about a game like this, the more you sort of say to yourself, you stop yourself, you're like, Jesus, really? How are they going to score? And by the way, Richard Sherman would love to tell you about all those picks, by the way, Dave, in tremendous detail. He would love to tell you about it. But, you know, the Seahawks, you mentioned their defense. So the last 4 weeks, the Seahawks have allowed just 27 points. Now, you remember, of course, they won the Super Bowl last year really on the strength of this defense. Their best 4-game stretch last year was 43 points allowed. Weeks 13 through 16. So having allowed just 27 in the past 4 weeks, this is their best stretch in the last 2 years, at least from a points allowed standpoint. And they were tied for second to last with 13 sacks through their first 10 games, but they've got 16 sacks over their last 4. And one more stat about Ryan Lindley just to drive home the point. Against that defense, Ryan Lindley's single biggest downfall, Dave, as a quarterback, his inability to connect deep. In his career, 1 of 22 on passes thrown 20-plus yards downfield. 1 of 22. Forget about it.
The Denver Broncos at the Cincinnati Bengals, our final televised game this weekend, Monday Night Football. The Broncos 20-33, the Bengals 29-20. On the spread, the Broncos -3 at 20-23, the Bengals +3 at 20-21. Denver, top of the tree in the AFC West, the Bengals occupying top spot in the AFC North. But as we've mentioned on previous podcast, Gil, that AFC North is a very tight division. Let's start with the Bengals, first of all, Gil, and them shutting out the Browns last weekend. And we've got to 25 minutes into the podcast without mentioning Johnny Manziel. So let's do that now. he was beaten badly by the Bengals last week. What did you make of his performance, first of all, Gil?
Just not ready for prime time.
No.
I mean, just not ready for it. And, you know, some scouts would tell you behind the scenes, probably the best thing that could have happened to the Browns. Because if Manziel had been great, he would have begun to think that he's the greatest thing in the world. And long term, that wouldn't have been a good proposition for the Browns. Now, maybe a little humility, maybe the ability to coach him up in the offseason, perhaps a different trajectory. So in a weird way, maybe the best thing that happened to the Browns. But as far as what was on the field on Sunday, I mean, that was amateurish. It really was. One of those picks was just horrible. And Manziel, to his credit, admitted as much afterwards. He's like, you know, you don't throw that ball in peewee football, let alone in the NFL. He was terrible. And the only issue with that, looking into this game, Dave, is do we really think much more of the Bengals as a result? So I guess our job as handicappers is to sort of throw that game out, because I don't know that we, you know, imagine the Bengals' defensive preparation, Dave. They're going from preparing for Johnny Manziel to preparing for Peyton Manning. That's amazing. It's a little bit of a different endeavor.
Yeah, and you mentioned how much do we read into that performance. I suppose Jeremy Hill got things going on the ground, 148 yards and two touchdowns against the Browns last week. But the Denver Broncos are a different challenge altogether against the run than the Browns, because they've got one of the stoutest run defenses in the NFL.
Yeah, 3.4 yards per opponent rush. Only the Detroit Lions are better. And as much as we like to think of Peyton Manning immediately when we say the words Denver Broncos, it's really about their defense. Their defense has been spectacular, and that's a problem. So Cincinnati is going to have to rely on their passing game. And when Cincinnati has to rely on Andy Dalton, it's sort of a coin flip. Some weeks he's really good, and some weeks he's atrocious. And so I don't know what you're getting here, but if I'm to put my money behind it, I'm certainly not going to bet on him, and I would lean Denver here. There's so many little stats that are eye-opening. I don't know how much I read into any of these, but just for the sake of interest, I'll throw out some of these. Primetime games, meaning nationally televised games. Andy Dalton's 2-6 lifetime with a 19.4 total QBR, including this year losing 43-17, the Bengals, that is, losing 43-17 at New England, and then 24-3 getting crushed by the Browns on a Thursday night at home on November 6th. So when the stage is the brightest, the Bengals are the dimmest. And Peyton Manning feasts on the Bengals, career 8-0, whether he was on the Broncos or the Colts, 8-0 career. Peyton Manning 22-1 against the AFC North, the Bengals' entire division. He's 6-0, Peyton Manning is, as the Broncos quarterback in December and January road games in the regular season since arriving in Denver, and he's won 8 straight of them going back to his time with the Colts. So all of that, all of those little mini trends, if you will, point resoundingly to the Broncos here.
Yeah, the Broncos are -3 points with the extra juice at 20-23. Incredible numbers, those, Gil. And Denver won 13 of the last 15 meetings against Cincinnati as well. I find it difficult to side with the Bengals here. You're going with the Broncos -3 at 20-23. They've decided to go with Hill as their primary back as well now, and just using Giovanni Bernard really is a relief running back, and it was a different case earlier on in the season. They're definitely going with Hill now, Gil.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's hard to get into the mind of what they're, you know, whatever the brass is thinking over there in Cincinnati. Giovanni Bernard is still a very dynamic back, and I think you really got a game plan for him. A.J. Green, of course, being their biggest threat on offense, but that's apples and oranges. But I don't know if, you know, that could be something that they're thinking in this game. But again, you pointed out Denver's rush defense, very stout. So I would think that Giovanni Bernard would play a bigger role in this game, at least from Cincinnati's game planning standpoint, because they got to figure, well, they may not have success with Jeremy Hill being straightforward. You know, when we relate this to the previous game, I love Seattle giving 7.5 because I just don't see how Arizona scores. This is one of those games where I like Denver, and I can sort of, you know, is there a scenario where Cincinnati just has this game where they play out of their minds? Yeah, I guess. You know, that's a possibility for sure. I just don't trust them. I really don't. And Andy Dalton puts up too many stinkers to really rely on him. So, yeah, I mean, I'll put my money on the Broncos for sure.
Let's finish off the podcast, as we always do, with the lock of the week, in inverted commas, the shock of the week, and your Super Contest picks as well. Gillen, we'll start with the lock.
I'm going to go Seattle. You know, yeah. I talked them up. I'll say it again. I think if you can't come up with a way that the other team scores points, and this is breaking news here, Dave. I have the most insightful thing I've ever said on this podcast about to happen. If the opponent does not score, they cannot win. Write that down, Dave.
That's a very fair point.
So I really love Seattle in this game.
And the shock of the week, Gil?
Shock of the week. You know, I'll tell you my other Super Contest picks are the Pittsburgh Steelers that we talked about. I like Detroit because I don't think Chicago is going to come out and play. I guess the shock, I mean, are the St. Louis Rams a shock? I don't think they're a shock. Hosting the Giants, they're another one of my picks. The Rams are. I think they'll dominate the Giants. And Denver would be the fifth pick. So amongst those, there is not a shock.
No, they're all favorite skill.
If I were to go out on a limb and say, well, what's the game besides that I could see being a shock this weekend? I'll be honest with you. The Minnesota Vikings might be a little shocking at Miami. I worry about the Dolphins at home. The Washington Redskins covering is an interesting proposition. I'll go with that one. I'll go with the Redskins because that's the biggest spread in terms of who I think could not only cover but actually threaten. I don't think the Redskins are going to win that game, but I think the Redskins will give the Eagles a good run, and I think so because DeSean Jackson hates his former team. He's going to show up for the Redskins. And RG3 is going to try to show up his own head coach, who seems to hate him. So I think the Redskins will put out a good effort. That's a Saturday game in the U.S., by the way.
It is,
Saturday games, now that college football is in bowl season. So I think shocks. I think Minnesota's got a shot to cover. I think the Redskins have a shot to cover. You know, I even think that the Atlanta Falcons and Buccaneers have shots to cover. I just don't see any of them winning.
No, that's,
and so I'm not willing to bet on them either.
That's a fair comment, Gil. And we must mention RG3, I suppose. He's back at the helm in Washington. But you're right, there seems to be an incredible amount of negativity within the coaching staff to RG3, which just astonishes me, really.
I have never seen a head football coach in the National Football League so hell-bent on throwing a player, especially a young one, under the bus, as Jay Gruden is trying to do with RG3. And let me just say, while the rest of the world has believed it to be fait accompli for months now, that RG3 will not be the quarterback of the Redskins next year, I have stood steadfast and have said all along, oh, he's absolutely going to be the quarterback of the Redskins next year. And Jay Gruden, who openly in a press conference told RG3 to worry about himself and not the other football players on the team. Well, Jay Gruden, you better worry about the other football players on the team, my friend, because he's 3-11, and they're going to be 3-13 most likely, even though I think they'll give the Eagles and the Cowboys a run here in the final 2 weeks. But most likely they're staring at 3-13. And at the end of the season, when Jay Gruden goes in to the owner's office and says, yeah, I don't like this RG3, the owner's going to look back at him and say, aren't you 3-13, buddy? Just checking.
Fantastic.
Why don't you sit down? Yeah, so I really think he's, you know, an RG3 with a good performance last week, not to belabor the point.
Yep.
Kind of checkmated Jay Gruden a little. And so, yeah, it's a scandal in Washington, but, you know, it's bigger. By the way, if you're in D.C., it's a bigger issue than anything the government's doing. The Redskins are always the headline. But they're a bad football team, so that's their fate year after year.
I am hoping, though, that RG3 puts up good numbers in these last 2 weeks, Gil.
I am, too.
I really am.
He's such a dynamic player, and his speed last week, I'm sorry, Dave, his speed looked great last week. So it's the first time we saw him post-injury where we're like, oh, wait a minute, I remember that.
He's seriously talented. He's seriously talented, and I'm hoping that now he is back to full fitness. And like you mentioned, the one moment where he should have scored the touchdown and the play got reviewed and then reversed, that was real speed, back to something like we saw in his rookie season.
Yeah, I got a phone call right as that happened from my buddy in D.C. He's like, did you see that? He's back. You know, it was put on his Superman cape, and he goes into an extra gear, and we haven't seen that. And, you know, understandably, since he's 24 years old, he's had two surgeries on the same knee. You know, what can we really expect from the poor kid? But he needed time, and maybe we've seen enough time. Now, a lot's going to be dictated here in the final 2 weeks. I mean, he could stink up the joint, I suppose, and this conversation becomes a little more muted, but I'm not rooting for that. I'm rooting for quite the opposite. I want to see him show up his own head coach, and really that's the drama in watching the Redskins. Certainly not a playoff berth on the line, I'll tell you that.
So just to recap before you leave us, Gil, your Super Contest picks this week, going with the Seattle Seahawks, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Detroit Lions, the St. Louis Rams, and the Denver Broncos as your five standouts this week.
Awfully chalky, as we like to say, Dave.
Yep.
But, yeah, those are my five. And again, when it gets to the end of the season here, a lot of that is dictated by so many other games being, you know, quote-unquote unplayable because you just don't know which teams are going to show up. San Francisco, San Diego is another game like that. You look at it and you're like, well, but I don't know what 49ers team's showing up because they're done. Do they care? They know their head coach is gone. So a lot of that's just by elimination, and those are the five games I end up on.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. Pleasure as always speaking to you, and have fun on the Megapod as per usual, and we'll catch up ahead of the final week of the regular season. It's almost coming to an end, Gil.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dave, it's my pleasure. I'm here for you when you need me, bright and early on the West Coast.
Thank you, sir.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.